Hi, everyone. It's Cindy with Goodwill Easter Seals Miami Valley, and we're doing the podcast Voices for Good. And today I have two of my two favorite people. It is another Cindy and Ashley, and it is all about peer support and what peer support is, and also Ashley's story. It's I'm just in awe of Ashley, very strong woman, and every time I hear your story, I cry. But first, I'm going to have Cindy tell us about peer support and what that is here at Goodwill.
Well, peer support is a person that has the direct lived experience of a mental illness, trauma, and or an addiction. And so here at Goodwill Easter Seals, our peer support program is where we're working with our community members that too have mental illness, trauma, and addiction. And so we can meet with them one-on-one. We can set up recovery plans for them. We can help them in groups. And that is what Ashley does. She does meet with our peers one-on-one. And she has a women's group that is very strong. And that's one of her passions is her women's group.
How'd you meet Ashley?
She was in one of my trainings. We have 8 certified peer trainings a year here at Goodwill Easter Seals. And so she was one of the folks that attended the training. And I saw her passion. I saw a sparkle. I saw so much potential. And I wanted her on my team. And she said yes.
And we are so happy you said yes.
I'm so happy I was asked.
Well, we've gone over your story multiple times since. How long have you been with Goodwill now?
Going on 2.5 years.
2.5 years. And like I said, it's a long story and a hard story, but it's also full of hope for others. And I think doing this podcast is really special because you can have a voice and you can tell your story and help others. And that's what you do every day in peer support.
Yeah, being a peer support has been a great opportunity for me to show individuals that there is another side to what they're going through. There is a recovery side. It is possible. I didn't have hope along the way for the longest time. So to be on this side of it and being able to show people that there is hope to look forward to has been a real blessing. So I'm really glad that I was able to be a part of this team.
And Ashley went ahead and Goodwill Easter Seals helped her find her voice. Being here and being allowed to grow and being in that safe place to be able to reach her full potential.
And I'm going to say that I think a lot of it also is the help that Ashley receives from you, Cindy, as the manager and a great mentor. I mean, I see the relationships that you build with a lot of people here. And
we have an absolutely wonderful team. I'm very blessed with that. It helps. I do get my peers from the training, so I get first selection since I do the training. But we are all of the like mind. It takes a team, and we have the passion and the heart to meet our peers where they're at. One of my sayings is we accept everybody that comes in our front door without judgment, and we meet them right where they're at.
Yeah.
And I try to always go with, for me, that I understand that there was a time where I didn't like myself, didn't love myself, didn't have any self-worth or anything. And becoming a peer support and, you know, doing all this stuff has been awesome. But I had somebody giving me that hope and that love and support to get me to a place where I am just able to overflow with it now and give it back. Mm-hmm. Because I will love you until you are able to love yourself, just as it was done for me. And it's been a really beautiful process to share that and grow here.
Well, let's start somewhere in your long story. I know that somewhere in high school, the relationship with your mom wasn't that great. And you actually were in high school and then went and lived somewhere else during high school.
Yeah, all my life, I did not have a good relationship with my mom. She was, you know, I realize now that she had mental health issues that were never addressed and whatnot, and that our family would never talk about. At a young age, I had went and visited her in a mental health hospital. We never talked about that, though. I just remember going up there and visiting, and nothing was discussed of it after that. But she had lots of breakdowns, and it caused her, unfortunately, to be very violent. You know, she was very abusive. She hit me a lot. There was a lot of trauma that came with that, the screaming, the yelling. I was terrified of her. I lived my life in fear. I was in constant, what's next? And, you know, had anxiety and all these things that stemmed from that. And the day that I turned 18, I actually got kicked out. She kicked me out, and I didn't have anywhere to go. I moved in with my Spanish teacher. A lot of the teachers, I lived in a small town, kind of knew, you know, when things were going wrong and stuff. And I had built that relationship with a Spanish teacher. So I moved in with her until I was able to leave 6 months later because I joined the military. I just knew that I wasn't going to be welcome at that house anymore, and that she was going to find a way to always make it not work. So I joined the military and, you know, went my separate ways after I lived with my teacher for 6 months.
I know that you were starting to drink alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it started in high school.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah, you know, I was probably 11, 12, started drinking. You know, my parents were very strict and whatnot, but for the most part, if I was at an event or something like a basketball game or whatever, you know, I found the kids that were smoking and drinking and doing all that stuff. So I completely participated in all that. I found the most joy in not caring. And for whatever reason, those, whether it be the drugs or the alcohol, gave me this feeling up here where I always felt the anxiety and stress and whatnot. I didn't care. I relaxed. And it was a escape for me. So I did that, you know, all through high school. Any chance I got, you know, I was smoking, drinking, taking pills. Yeah. And I was able to hide it because my parents really didn't give me a lot of attention. They just did not want to be bothered by me. So I just always stayed out of their way, especially because I didn't want to make her mad. I did that all through when I graduated. I was partying. Doing drugs, snorting coke, you pretty much name it. Until I left for the military, I got clean enough for that time so I could pass my drug test so I could leave for basic. But yeah.
So what happened in basic then? You started and you went to basic and...
Yeah, I was in basic training. I was in the military for a year and a half. I ended up getting injured, so I got an honorable discharge, a medical discharge. And when I came back... I mean, I had money saved up and stuff, so that was cool. I was able to get my own place, like, pretty much immediately. I think I only stayed with my parents for maybe 10 days when I get back, and she was not – it wasn't even a good time then. But then I had my own place, and I just started using. I was a functioning alcoholic for 10 years. I, you know, had my apartment. I had a job that I held down for almost 10 years, but I was very – a high functioning alcoholic.
Well, what set things going down another path again? Because I know you were drinking, and but then there were other things that started happening in your life because of the drinking, and you were working full time. But then,
yeah,
it all caught up, I think.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with the drinking came more bad decisions and whatnot, and some that aren't even very memorable. But I got married 3 times and divorced 3 times. And, you know, in that time, the men that I had picked were, you know, I only knew abuse and stuff like that. So I did not pick the right men. Those relationships were abusive and violent and toxic. And I was toxic. I take ownership on that too. I had no idea what I was doing in relationships. I hadn't had any really great experience with that. So yeah, you know, I kept drinking and kept thinking these relationships would be better. The next guy would be better. He would save me. I'd be all right. He'd understand all my trauma and blah, blah, blah. And that's just not the case. They didn't. And we were toxic to one another and we were abusive to one another. And, you know, after so long of drinking and stuff, it all caught up to me. And, you know, I wasn't able to go to work anymore. I quit my job of 10 years via text message because I was too drunk to go back. and then, you know, that marriage fell apart because I wasn't doing what I was told anymore. And it just escalated so badly to where the second to last marriage went downhill and whatnot. I had a house that I had, you know, in my name, that was my mortgage. But I wasn't able to work. I had already quit that job. The guy wasn't supporting me anymore or anything. I lost the house. I lost the car. I lost everything, became homeless, started getting involved with other people that, you know, were homeless men and whatnot. It just went downhill so fast.
Right.
And yeah, with that, I ended up being homeless and meeting different guys and staying at different places. Girls too, but everyone was kind of just taking advantage of one another and stuff. It was a whole different lifestyle that I was just not anticipated, or ready for. But, yeah, in the meantime, some of the guys that I met had ulterior motives for why I was able to stay with them. And what I thought were boyfriends and men that liked me and stuff were actually buying me and selling me to the next one. And, you know, I was in 38 places in 18 months with living a lifestyle that I was almost oblivious to. And, you know, the 38th place was a boyfriend that I thought we had a place together. I thought we were whatever. But one night, because I was an alcoholic through this entire time I was using and stuff, but I was only an alcoholic and, you know, weed and pills and whatnot. But at this time, it was my first time I was passed out drunk. And this guy shot me up with meth for my first time. And I woke up, my arm was burning, it was a partial miss. So it was burning, but my heart was going, all these things. It was a lot to take in. You know, I said I needed to go to the hospital. Something's wrong. This is not normal. And he, you know, confessed, you can't, because then you could get me in trouble. You know, you're on meth right now and blah, blah, blah. And at this point, I had been living with him for, oh gosh, going on a year. And, you know, he had me very well groomed in, I do what he says. It happened without any acknowledgement. I mean, it's just so crazy how it happens, the grooming process of everything. But I did not question him. I shut up and I said, okay. And I accepted in my mind that this is my life now. So for the next 6 years, I did meth. I continued a lifestyle of, after he was done with me and kicked me out, you know, I was sent on to the next place in person. And that went on for 6 years. I tried to get away a couple of times, you know, on my own accord. But that just did not go well because I was out there by myself. I was getting in lots of fights and stuff like that and getting beat up a lot. And that was really not fun. So, you know, having a guy offered protection, you know, I was even sold to this one guy by his mother. And I really did not realize that one until he was beating me to a pulp and saying, I'm going to get my money out of you. And that was one of the roughest times, because that's when, you know, I was held for 3 hours getting beaten, told, go take a shower, you're bleeding on the place. And I ended up crawling out of a window. And a neighbor saw me and they came and helped me. And they took me in an ambulance to the hospital and they ended up, you know, putting him in prison. I desperately called my parents that time because I really thought, I really don't know what to do. And they told the doctor that I was not going to be a burden on their life, and they hung up on the doctor, which that was like the crushing point to me, to know that there wasn't really a return for that relationship ever, because I couldn't wrap my head around that. But that was, you know, I went into a domestic violence shelter. I tried to get clean and sober for the simple fact that I knew I needed to make some changes in my life. But at that point, I didn't love myself. There was nothing there for me.
Well, I know you're from Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you're in Dayton, Ohio.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, yes.
How did you get to Dayton, Ohio from Oklahoma?
Well, I tried recovery. It didn't work out so well. I knew a guy. He was leaving town. The guy I knew was going to prison and stuff, and I really didn't want to be around when he got out, however long that was going to be. So I took the first ride out of Oklahoma that I could get. I ended up in Forsyth, Missouri. And while I was there, you know, I didn't. It was just too, let's just be real. I kept trying to numb everything. I kept trying to numb the fact that my parents didn't want anything to do with me and that they didn't care that I was, you know, laid up in a hospital. I wanted to forget the fact that all these things that were happening, being bought, sold, traded, and doing, I did it to myself too. You know, I mean, there's times where just because I didn't know what was going on, I also didn't want to be homeless. And so I did what I was told.
And your addiction was controlling things too.
That was a big part of it too. You know, of course I'm going to go where the meth is at. And even when I didn't go where the meth was at, there was alcohol there. So it was one addiction for another. That's why I think they're all bad. They are all equally bad to me. I ended up in Missouri. And while I was there, I overdosed. It was a bad overdose. The neighbors found me. I guess I wasn't breathing right. So they called an ambulance and I went to the hospital then. That guy never came to claim me. So I was in a state where I knew nobody with nothing. Mind you, these times are very scary too, because I wear contacts. And so if I can't see, that's really scary. And I only had the contacts in my eyes. I'd already been left at a truck stop before without my glasses. The guy took my glasses. So I remember it's very dangerous to not have sight and be in a situation where you don't know anyone. So while I was at the hospital and I had the opportunity with these wonderful nurses that, you know, showed me compassion and love and stuff, you know, they offered me a treatment option. That's the route that I wanted, because I didn't want to be there, you know, with nothing. I kind of was put in a position where God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I am so grateful for that. But I'm also grateful that in that time that he did that and put me in that situation of where I couldn't do for myself, he also put these angels in my presence too. Because these people made these phone calls. These people said, we want to help you. We want to get you somewhere. We want to get you treatment. They had an officer come get me, and he drove me 3 hours from Forsyth to St. Louis to a mental health treatment facility where I stayed, which is abnormal, but I stayed 11 days until they could get me an open bed at a place called Queen of Peace, which is a women's substance abuse treatment center. And so I went there, I stayed 22 days. They had seen me while I was in there. I always believed in God all my life. I always have, even through anything bad that was happening. I knew that there were choices that I was making. I knew that I'm down here, this is a temporary place and life happens and things bad happen. But I always knew that I had God. And I always knew that, and so I found a little Bible while I was there. It was a New Testament one. I still have it to this day and am still reading it.
Is that what's on the desk? Is it on your desk? I've seen
one. No, I keep this one at home by my nightstand. I like to have my inspirational things too and spiritual things, because that's a big part of my recovery. But, you know, I was reading it, and the counselor that I was working with just happened to notice that I was constantly reading it. And you know, there was not beds open at places at that time. Recovery places were really full. It looked like I was going to probably go to the St. Louis shelter, which was not the greatest, they had told me, but I didn't, you know, whatever. I'm just trying to do the next right step every time, as I was told in treatment and as I was being told along the way. And she said, you know, I noticed that you are reading this Bible and stuff. There is this place, it's a ministry place. And, you know, it's all a faith-based program. Would you be interested? And I'm like, oh, yes. Like, that's really like my heart's desire. I didn't even know things like that existed, you know? And so she made the calls, got me the interview with the lady, and they accepted me into their program. And I was so happy, like, for once. I just felt, and I felt safe, and I almost could have kissed the ground that I, when I walked in the door, because it was that sense of, I have a shot, I have a chance, I have an opportunity now. This might really work. And 3 months into that, the place lost some of their funding and they were having to shut down. So that was really horrible. But they said, you know, we realized that you want to continue this path and whatnot. We have enough funds. We can get you a bus ticket. We'll find you a sister house. Would you be willing to relocate? And I'm like, yes, of course.
You know, like, sign me up. I'm going now.
This time I'm not leaving with a man. I'm going toward a recovery program. Right. And, you know, it was a real opportunity.
You're doing it for you.
Yeah, for me. And on a good terms, not on sporadic, I need to leave with a man terms. Right. This is me. This is for my recovery. And so that was awesome. And so I said, yes, absolutely. So they found me a sister house place that was the Oasis House, which helps women that have been trafficked and have dealt with domestic violence, substance abuse. It was the whole thing again. And so I was very excited. So I got on a Greyhound bus and I got here, and that was November 24th-ish of 2019. And I was able to stay at the Oasis House for 2 years to get on my feet. During that time, I was going to an outpatient treatment center, 115, which really helped me. And I had a peer support person there. And she mentioned to me, you know, you should do some peer support, like you should become one. And I really didn't understand what that was. And I got to know her a little bit more. I got to see what she was doing and how she told her story and in these little increments and stuff to show some support and hope. And, you know, it just made sense. And so I looked into it. I found some peer support training stuff that was online and here in the Montgomery County. I reached out to Cindy. I talked to her personally. She sent me the application. We talked, and she helped mentor me, to become a peer support and get enrolled in her program. So I did my E-Based Academy courses. I was able to sign up for one of the actual, 40-hour trainings because it was virtual. And while I was doing that, I got to know Cindy as a group. We get to know each other and we get to interact in this training and whatnot. I had expressed to her an interest in a job that I was possibly wanting, but that it was not going to probably work out because I received services there. I was pretty bummed. And she said, hey, you know, I got this opportunity. I got this job at Goodwill, doing peer support. You know, would you be interested? And again, I know this is all a God thing, and it's just, everything is just, you know, when things start working out and they come naturally and you're not pushing for something, it's just such a nice, it's just such a perfect okay. That's where I know that this is okay. This is my next step. Okay. You know, this is where I'm going to be. So that all worked out. So, I came in, I interviewed for the job and stuff. I had that wonderful opportunity. And I've been working here ever since. I started out on the warm line, which is a great emotional support thing. It helped me because at that time I was fairly scared of people. Men for sure. Pretty angry at them at that time, but you know, women, anything, people, I was scared. But to have the warm line, help get me back into these people were calling and they needed support. They needed someone. And I understood that because I felt how those people felt on that line. I felt a brokenness to me. So to be able to be a support system for them, God, that was so empowering. And so, and it helped me grow, and she just kept pouring Miracle Grow on me.
I like that Miracle Grow.
Right. And she knew that she saw this potential in me that I didn't. And that's what I just thrive from, that is knowing that I can see potential in someone that is in the same situation I am. And I just get to see it go and keep going and keep going. It's like a generation to generation, only it's even more frequently with the people that we serve. And that's what I love about it, is I'm serving people, and that's what I want to do. God called us to serve one another, and I have the opportunity to be a servant and do that. So I'm all for.
So what do you tell someone though, that is in the same place that you were at, and they don't know how to get out of the situation they're in, or they don't see hope like you started to see the hope? And what would you say to them?
So I've had some opportunities, because I wondered how that would be. You know, I was in a situation where I was out on the streets. I wasn't ever in. So the fact that I have these people that are coming to me, and that there's so much help out there, there's so many opportunities out there and stuff. And, you know, I'm all for street outreach or whatever we can do to get out there, to let people that are, mm-hmm. you know, in the dark know there are resources, and we would love to come for you and help you and pull mm-hmm. you. I didn't have that, you know, for years. and I didn't even know what recovery was. And so there's just, Goodwill has all these opportunities for people, but other resources. There's so many resources right, out there. Right. It's not just Goodwill. Well, you right. know, anywhere you want to go, the Oasis House helped me. 115 helped me in my treatment. Church has helped me. You know, there's Celebrate Recovery. There's so many different ways to recovery. And I just feel like, you know, having a peer support person to help love you through the process, because that's what I needed, was someone to love me, because I did not love myself, has helped me regain my self-worth, you know, I never thought I was going to like myself, but today I can say I love myself. And there are people I understand that aren't at that part, but just letting me be there and a support system for them, I have seen growth. I've seen people that weren't going to get jobs go and say, you know what, I'm going to go do this. I want to do this. They mm-hmm. feel empowered just right. knowing that someone else has been through something.
Just as sitting down with a peer, one gives them acceptance, one that we've walked from the lobby to a huddle room with them, mm-hmm. Side by side. You know, we're not the doctor that's walking six paces in front of you, right. and that makes a difference. Right. It sounds very minor, but it makes right. a difference. Right. And then we just ask that peer, what do you want? You know, what do you mm-hmm. want? Well, what I want doesn't happen. Well, no, what do you want? How can I help you? What do you need? And sometimes those simple needs are food.
Yeah. What do you need? It's,
Ashley will always say, it's about knowing that someone is there for you.
Absolutely.
And helping you get what you need.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't feel alone, that right. there's someone there for you.
Yeah.
But you have extra special children.
My puppies.
Your puppies.
My dogs.
Your
yes.
little dogs.
Yes.
So you have a place to live and you have your dogs.
Yeah, I'm flourishing. I'm doing yeah. something I never thought I would. You know, I was able to move out on my own, have a vehicle, get my license back, which for years I never thought that was mm-hmm. a possibility. I have my own bedroom. I have my own bed. I have a TV, you know. Things. You just, when you don't have anything, you lost it all, mm-hmm. and you're at that worst of worst. Mm-hmm. I never imagined me, you know, having anything, a kitchen again. And I do. I have all these things, and it's amazing. And to be able to show some hope and show, you know, love along the way, and that all things are possible. And having these dogs, I never thought I was going to have puppies again, and they are my world. You know,
they're really
cute, they mean a lot to me,
yeah.
you know.
So I just want people to know they can reach out to Goodwill. I mean, Sweet. Like Cindy said, anyone that walks in the door, we're going to do what we can to help you. And the story that you told today, Ashley, I hope someone hears it that really needs the help, and know that you're doing a great thing and you're helping people, and you do inspire a lot of people. So I want to thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Cindy, for doing all the great work that you do.
Thank you.
So if people have been wondering, like, our mannequins that are dressed back here and all the little things back here was made possible by the Goodwill stores.
And it's so
decor
comfortable.
In the store. Yeah. Yes.
Decor in the store. I love that, Cindy.
I do too.
Yeah. So it was donors that came in and donated all this stuff so we can sell it in the stores, because for every revenue dollar that we get, 87 cents goes back right to programs like Peer Support Program.
Absolutely.
For us to help everyone. So shop, donate, and change a life. That's what I always say.
Absolutely. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.